I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brightest Female Podcast. In this episode, I'm lucky enough to be in conversation with a true pioneer in the period care space, but really someone who's at the helm of a movement that helped rewrite the narrative around period stigma. Karine Chambers-Saini is the founder and CEO of Diva, the company behind the original Diva Cup. You heard that right. What started over two decades ago as a mother-daughter mission to bring a better, more sustainable alternative to pads and tampons has since grown into a global brand that reshaped the menstrual care industry. Back in 2002, Karine and her mom, Francine, launched Diva out of their basement in Kitchener, Ontario. And together, they took on an industry that wasn't built with women's bodies, or the planet for that matter, in mind. Their vision? Conscious, accessible, stigma-free period care for every body. Since then, Diva has become a true household name, known not just for innovation, but for pushing the conversation forward around menstrual equity, sustainability, and body confidence. In this conversation, Karine shares what it took to build a brand that challenged the status quo, how she continues to lead with purpose today, and what's next for a company that's always been ahead of its time. Let's get into it. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Karine, it's a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female today. Thank you so much for making time to speak with me.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so happy to be here.
And I mean, I love everything that your brand, stands for, and you've been around the market. You were probably one of the earlier brands to really focus on women's health and to revolutionize the category. So I'm so excited to hear about your journey and hear about the idea behind getting Diva started. And first, I like to start these conversations by asking guests to walk down memory lane a little bit. And I'm curious to know, growing up, what kind of future were you picturing for yourself? What kind of career were you envisioning doing? And was it at all connected to what you're actually doing today?
Well, for myself, I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur or something in business, marketing, branding. I knew that from a pretty young age. And by grade nine, I had my heart set on one particular school. And that was kind of my goal. But I didn't really know exactly that I was going to end up doing what I'm doing now. And, you know, having my own brand and just this whole journey, I've been doing this for almost 24 years.
Wow.
So it's a long time. And it's been beyond my wildest expectations and dreams for sure.
That's amazing. And congratulations for, you know, for that longevity in business. And I want to know, how did the idea for Diva first start? And you've just mentioned you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur. I'm guessing you didn't know exactly what category your business would be in. But tell me a little bit about the journey that led you to wanting to create the company Diva.
Well, the journey actually starts with my mom. We started the company together in 2001. We began the journey, but back to when she was actually 14 years old and, you know, kind of 13, 14 in the early 60s, that she knew that she hated menstrual products. She got her period. She hated it. She had all brothers and they're at the beach and she's just like sitting on the side. And she was told, well, you can't go swim. Like they had these massive pads with the pins and the belts and all that. And she was like, absolutely devastated. And she's like, there has to be a better way. There has to be something better for women that we can have freedom. And she started dreaming of the cup idea that day and kind of never got it out of her mind. And it wasn't until I was 14 that her and my dad were traveling and she saw this tiny classified ad in the back of a health publication in a coffee shop in their travels about this menstrual cup. And she's like, oh my God, this actually exists. I can't believe this exists. I've been like dreaming of this since I was a young teen. And she just always like wanted something better. And she contacted the company, and there's been a number of versions of cups on the market since the 1930s. We didn't even know. And then she was like, so mad. How can this be around for all these years? And yet we're all suffering.
No one knows about it. Yeah.
And no one knew about it. And it was just, she was just angry. And so she just decided, okay, I'm going to dedicate my life to doing this. So that was really the catalyst. And I was only 14 at the time, and my mom began marketing an earlier version of the cups, which the earlier versions were all kind of rubber based. They look like mini toilet plungers, and it wasn't very aesthetic, or it was a very hard material. And she still, I mean, her and I used it. I started using a cup when I was 14 years old. When she discovered them, and we kind of never went back. We just, we fell in love with the concept. And by that point, I had gone all through high school, all through university, and went for business and marketing. And we just were like, this needs to go to the world. Like every woman, like this has to be on every shelf. Like that was the big vision. Every shelf needs to have pads, tampons, cups. Like it was like really super, super niche. It was very hard to find. And so that was our big dream. And so we began the journey of developing and modernizing the age old menstrual cup into modern materials and modern manufacturing and tooling and packaging. And I mean, at that point, even despite the years that my mom Francine had been in the business, we really didn't know what we were getting into. We didn't know how we were gonna do it, but we knew we had to do it. And that's kind of where the journey began.
And at that point, was your mom, you know, was she already an entrepreneur? Was this kind of her first business? And then, you know, you were still quite young when she came up with the idea, and the two of you, you know, started working on the company. So what was it like kind of adjusting to, you know, that new reality of you becoming an entrepreneur at such a young age?
So my mom actually was like a natural born entrepreneur. My dad as well. He always had businesses in IT and tech. And my mom had retail stores. So she was always in like fashion and that type of thing. Jewelry. She had a jewelry store for many, many years and multiple locations. And she was just very creative and wanted to do something for herself. And actually that's how she began marketing menstrual cups to women, was through her customers at the jewelry store. By the time I had gone through university and graduated from Laurier Business, we decided to start the company. And it was a very big transition, because we also had this idea. I mean, I was, you know, right out of school and super optimistic. And I thought everything was going to be very easy, and we would just get the product made and get it into stores. And I remember like our early trade shows being like, oh yeah, it's going to be in all the retail soon, telling people. I'm like, we had no idea that it was going to be the journey that it was. Literally took years, years and years and years of like on the like grinding pavement, just door slammed in our face, all of that. Even just getting the product made was so difficult. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I'm like, well, we're just going to go get it made. Like, how hard can that be? Oh yeah, we'll just get a Health Canada approvals and FDA. No problem. Like, I was overly optimistic, which I think actually was a good thing, because probably would have gotten scared off if I knew what I was actually in for. But we were able to one by one solve all these problems. It took a long time, but we found our way. And we just, if one thing didn't work out, okay, where else can we go? Actually, the very first time that we decided to make it, I literally opened a physical phone book I was like looking, I'm like, there must be some tool makers in town. Well, let's talk to a tool maker. So we
back when
actually,
we still had DOS
when we
instead of
had like
Google.
the phone books that were like, you know, 5 inches thick. It was like wild. It was very scrappy for a very long time.
What was it like working with your mom? And, you know, this is kind of a completely unique path because you didn't really set out, you know, you didn't know that was going to be your career, basically. But what was it like being on that journey with her?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, we definitely had our differences, but we also had a lot of qualities that complemented each other. And she was very good at kind of the operations and the financial side and the accounting and the bookkeeping. She was like meticulous, so she always kept everything in order. And I was more in the sales and marketing side and creating relationships with our vendors and our suppliers and manufacturing and the design. So we really complemented each other in the actual like functioning of the business, and we were able to do a lot and accomplish a lot with her and I and very few people for many years. It was a very small team. And, you know, what I appreciated the most about her is that she let me make mistakes. She would allow me to, you know, fail. Sometimes we didn't always agree. And she'd be right. Like, okay, you're very like adamant about this thing. Okay, let's do it. And we just had a really great way of working together, and I really appreciate that. And we had a lot of fun. Like, we traveled all over the place together. I mean, how amazing to work with your mom. My mom's my best friend, and we got to have this incredible adventure together. I'll never forget that.
And you just made reference to, you know, some of the challenges along the way, like finding somebody to make this thing for you and getting Health Canada approvals. What was kind of, you know, was there kind of a moment at some point in those early years where it felt like, okay, this is not going to work. Like, we might not be able to bring this product to market. And how did both of you manage that?
Yeah, there was many moments like that over the years. I think if you talk to any entrepreneur, I mean, the self-doubt and the like where you feel completely in over your head was probably every few months something would happen and be like, well, what are we doing here? The making of it was extremely challenging. We actually had silicone companies and like manufacturers saying, we will never make this. This is something we won't even touch, and nobody's going to make this, and like all of that. But we just, you know, what was really cool about what happened is that every time we were just up against a wall, there would be something that would happen where like a light would shine. Somebody would come into, we would find someone that could help us. And it just, it really felt like we were guided and supported the whole way, because even with all the challenges, it was like two steps forward, one step back. But we always had, like, there was just always that glimmer of light that we were on the right path and we had to keep going. And somebody would come, like, we found the manufacturer, we found somebody that was willing to work with us and help us, like, really take it from the early terrible design that didn't even work in the first versions, but, you know, to go through that whole process. And even, you know, when we started going to trade shows and everyone was like freaked out about it and nobody wanted to use it and we didn't sell any, and then like we would meet one person that would try it and literally run to the bathroom, they're like, I'm gonna use it right now, and come back and it's like, oh my god, I've been walking around the show all day, this is amazing, this is like life-changing. And it was just then those moments would get us to the next phase, and it would just, that's what kept us going, that's what kept us motivated to help women, you know. When we saw and we knew how it changed our lives, and we're like, everybody, once they try it, we know that they'll get it, and then they'll tell people. And I think a lot, because we had hardly any budget for years, yet the movement was being created. I mean, because women were using it, they were loving it. They were like, this is better than anything they've ever tried. I mean, we know all the challenges with tampons and pads. They're uncomfortable, they're expensive, they leak. I mean, so many things. So to have this freedom, it was like something that truly spread. It was like the word was and the satisfied raving fans were created, and those diva fans were telling their friends, telling their family, creating conversations around. And up to that point, I feel like no one even talked about periods. It was just something that you just had to deal with.
Yeah.
But it was like the Diva Cup literally created a whole generation of conversations around periods and discussing it, which is just such a cool thing. And it just, it actually gives me goosebumps because that was really rewarding for both my mom and I.
And it's, I was going to bring that up. It feels like you help kind of change the conversation and create a conversation around menstrual care, which, you know, it feels like we're having more of that conversation in recent years, but for a long time, it was a taboo topic, right? And women didn't talk about their experience. And all we knew was commercials on TV that would show blue liquid and, you know, a tampon absorbing it. And, you know, real blood wasn't even being used in research around menstrual care products. Did you realize at that time that this was completely trailblazing, that you were kind of creating a new narrative for the category and for periods overall?
I think we always had that as part of our dream and our mission, but I don't think we actually understood that it was actually happening and the impact that it was having and how widespread it was becoming. It was very surprising. And I mean, especially we know that everything you said is true. The stigma and taboos surrounding menstruation have gone for like thousands of years. It's just, it's really something that has impacted society. It's impacted women's health in a lot of ways. And so I'm really excited to know that we even had a small part in you know, creating that movement and making it okay to talk about periods and just hitting it head on.
And you created the category too. You've mentioned, you know, there was maybe a prototype for the product or something that existed, but the cup is known as the Diva Cup today. So, you know, you made that happen, just like Kleenex made tissues happen, right? Which is really impressive for a Canadian company. What was your growth strategy over the years, and what is it today still? Because, you know, you kind of created that niche product. You had to convince a lot of people and retailers to adopt it and accept it and sell it. It seems like you hit that point of, you know, really getting that positive response from the market, and people started buying it and talking about it and sharing the news. So you became kind of, you know, the new, the category became mainstream within menstrual care products overall. So you achieved that. How did you make sure to stay relevant and to keep expanding from that point on?
Those are great questions. Our main strategy was to grow the distribution. We really had that vision. We felt that was important for the category to have menstrual cups on shelf would change the whole industry. And that's why, I mean, we did have a website. We sold online in the beginning, but when we started going to retailers, they didn't want us to be selling online, because at that time there was no really e-commerce competing. So it was either or.
Yeah.
And that was one of the hardest decisions we ever had to make, because we literally had, we could either pursue the retail avenue or the D2C angle. And the D2C was what was helping us survive. I mean, we were sending out, we literally would pack up, we processed all the orders ourselves. We even punched in the credit card numbers. It was just wild, and we would take huge bags to the post office every day. I mean, that it was our it, that's how we were growing the company. And we never had any funding. We never had any money from anywhere. We funded our own growth.
Impressive. Wow.
So that was like really critical, and that was a big decision. But ultimately, we chose, like, for the sake of this category, it had to be on shelf. Like, nothing else will make women realize that this is a real thing. It could not be a niche thing. It had to be a real thing on shelf. So once we started getting retail distribution, we started with a distributor, we started getting smaller retailer accounts. But it wasn't until 11 years later that we got our first national account, which was Shoppers Drug Mart. Was our first mass market account. So that really started changing everything. And then we had probably 4 or 5 years with massive amounts and very quick growth, because we were adding so many retail locations. I think we were up to like 60,000 retail locations at one point.
Wow.
And which was probably too fast. So if we didn't know that in those days, like that we were so new. And it's almost like winning the lottery, even getting into a retail account like that. Companies like us at that time were not getting on shelf. They were big companies. All the aisles, especially in the femme care aisle, literally every brand is a big
A giant
international
corporation.
global conglomerate. It was really something that was like unheard of at that time.
That's very impressive that you were able to achieve that. And I know eventually there was a decision to branch out into other products, within the category. So tell me a little bit about that and how you came to that decision, because you have this amazing product that's become a staple and
I
that continues
know.
to sell. So how did the conversation evolve to we're actually going to create something new within the brand umbrella?
Well, the thing is, we always had the intention to grow Diva and to expand into other products. And we kind of got buried under the task that we really had, which was like paving the way for this category and pioneering a whole new category with no funding, essentially.
That's
And
truly impressive.
a market that really wasn't ready for it. I mean, they weren't really ready for this yet. So it took all of our resources and energy to do that. So we couldn't do that until a lot later. We started really looking at this about maybe around 2017 or something, where we started. So that's what, 7, 8 years ago, kind of thing, where we were really starting to build out our long-term strategy. We were starting to work on a rebrand, and we wanted to create more products for our customers. Like, a lot of our original Diva Cup customers don't need it anymore, and women have so many issues. And now I'm in that phase too, and perimenopause age, and probably will be in menopause pretty soon and postmenopause. And so it's things that, like, we want to service our customers through all their cycles of their life, not just the menstrual cycle. So that was kind of the thinking, the strategy behind that. And it did take us longer than we expected. And then we had the pandemic, which really changed a lot for us, as well as the influx of competitors into the space. So a lot of things, we lost some retail, just a lot of things that happened that took it a little bit longer, but we are finally here about 2 years ago, or I think it's the third year now, that we rebranded Diva Cup to Diva.
Diva.
And we were able to finally do a complete makeover of the brand on every level, including packaging, logos, everything, and a much more elevated, like, aligned to where we're going and who we are. And I think we just didn't we weren't able to communicate that before. So that critical step was super important to get that done. And then launching our latest launch, well, we launched other menstrual care products, the disc and the underwear, and we're still extremely passionate. We'll always be about periods and menstrual care, but now we're expanded into pelvic wellness, into vulva care, which we just launched, which is getting extremely well received. And I think the exciting part for me is that we've built a brand. We've built Diva. Yeah. People trust Diva. We're the most trusted menstrual cup brand on the market. And we've taken those same values into the vulva care. And I personally wasn't impressed with what was on the market. There's a lot of chemicals and parabens and fragrance and endocrine disruptors that I don't like all those products for myself. So, and I have a daughter now who's 15, and I just, you know, want better for her now, the same way I'm basically the age that my mom was when we started Diva. She was, I think, in her early 40s. And now, you know, I'm in my late 40s, but now we're like able to really like create the cycle again and create the next generation and really create a legacy for women and for menstruators and those with vulvas that need that care.
Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more. And how did you go about kind of identifying what those products were going to be, the new products that you launched, you know, to follow suit to the cup? Was it kind of, you know, your own research observing what was on the market, maybe your own personal experience? Did you work with anyone in, you know, science or doing R&D for you guys? Tell me a little bit about that process to identify exactly what you wanted to launch in terms of those new products.
Yeah, well, when we were really since like, I think 2019 was when we kind of built out our strategy. We looked at the categories that really mattered to us and that we wanted to enter. Yeah, as women, we spend so much time and effort and money on our skincare, but we're ignoring one of the most important areas, and it creates a lot of pain and discomfort for women on a daily basis. So we're trying to educate women and those with vulvas to understand the care. We need to take the same care. And through the hormonal cycles, even as a teen, they experience dryness and itchiness and discomfort. So it's important to, like, we're now on a mission to change the narrative around caring for the vulva with the same care that you use. And now we're on a mission to create the same care for the vulva that we do in our skincare routine, but for the vulva. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really cool. It's really exciting and it's needed. It's definitely a really big, there's a big gap there.
It's definitely needed. And the good news is we are having more conversations around it. And, you know, we're having more conversations around realities like hormonal cycles impacting, you know, our vulva's microbiome, for example, or our vagina's microbiome rather. And we now take that into account in terms of managing our health as women. And then we are also having more conversations around perimenopause and menopause. And there's in turn, brands are offering more options. So thank you for doing that and kind of being a leader in the market.
It's really exciting to see that those conversations are happening, especially around the perimenopause and postmenopause. Like, no one even really understands what's happening. And it started for me, and like, I would say at least 7 years ago. I think it's like a 10-year process where the hormones and all these things start changing. And we really dug deep into the research of this area specifically. And there was a lot. I'm like, how come we don't know about this? I mean, even my mom is now in her 70s and she still has no support with her hormone changes and everything. It's like you have to pull teeth to try to get any care
answers.
And like,
yeah.
Yeah, what's going on? And like, it's just such an important area. And there's a lot more research that needs to be done in this area. And as we know, women's health issues are underfunded.
Yeah, 100%. How would you attribute or, you know, sum up your recipe for success and the fact that your brand has remained relevant in your category for so long?
I mean, the only recipe is that you can't give up. And I would say, you know, you have to be like, we were a little bit conservative, but we took risks when we had to. We took calculated risks. I think that's important. You have to be, I mean, don't become an entrepreneur if you don't want to take any risks, because
good point.
You will pull your hair out. Like, it's not for you. if you need stability. No,
that's definitely don't become an entrepreneur.
No, it's a wild ride, but it's like really, really rewarding. And when you find something that you care so much about, and you just, it doesn't matter what door slams in your face or what challenge you encounter, that you just keep going. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is don't be afraid of change. And when you've been
another
around,
good one.
That's the thing that has impacted us most with the longevity of Diva. And
okay.
I was very, you know, attached to our branding, our like everything that we had built, but you know, things change over time, and it's not, you can't just keep doing something because you've always done it that way. You need to be open. So I think I attribute that another reason that we're still successful today, that we've been able to adapt to the changing preferences, to competition, to, I mean, things are constantly changing. You can't stay the same. Yeah. So that is my second major, major piece.
And from kind of a company strategy standpoint and your own strategy as, the leader at the helm of the company, your mom started a company with your support and, you know, you're leading the company now. You have a daughter. Are you hoping she's going to take over one day? Or is there maybe a strategy for an exit or a transition at some point?
I mean, we're open to different options at this point. We're just, I don't see us exiting anytime. We love what we do so much. And my mom actually retired about 8 years ago, and my husband came in the business like slowly. And then, so him and I actually run the company together. He runs the day-to-day. So it's still family business, and it's, that's another whole conversation. And it's a bit of a wild ride working with your
significant
other, but, it's been incredible. He has a lot of the qualities my mom had. So, we complement each other, and I really, am passionate about what I get to do, and he loves what he does and in the company. And you know, we just continue to grow and change and evolve as a brand, and like we're really just getting started. I feel like this is almost a complete rebirth of Diva. Yet we're carrying the Diva name and the legacy that we've created, but it's just like the possibilities are endless. We have so many great products actually in the works right now that are coming soon. As we continue to evolve and to expand into categories that really matter to us and to our customers.
That's very exciting. Very exciting things ahead. If you had to share three pieces of advice, so three things maybe you learned, you know, the hardware, things you wish you knew before you started, things that could help other women in business, what would those three tips be?
I think one of the mistakes that we made was just trying to do everything yourself. And you know, it's hard when you're starting out because there isn't really funding to do that. And I do think, I got completely burnt out, and my mom too. We both were working like every single day of the week and ridiculous hours, and like we grinded for years and years and years and years. It was a lot, and it definitely impacted both of our health and wellness and well-being, and I think ultimately the business, because at some point things are going to start falling apart if you don't ask for help, especially once I became a mother. I also have a son who's 14, and so they're 1 year apart, so you can imagine how that was.
I
But
bet, yes. A lot of babies to take care of.
yeah, and you know, I wish we would have engaged with more help. Now I think there's a lot more resources too. There's you know, even just going on Dragon's Den or Shark's Tank, where you can exhibit your brand, get exposure for your brand. I mean, we didn't have social media. We had no social media. There was no such thing as influencers. Everything was very traditional. We advertised in magazines. Like, we just did whatever we had to do to get like scrappy exposure. But at this point, I feel like engage, if you're an entrepreneur, engage in every possible avenue of help. I mean, there's government grants available. There's scale up programs, incubators. I mean, there's so many options now. I feel like especially in Canada, that we're really creating a hub for supporting entrepreneurship, and you know, utilize every one of those if you can.
So, do you think there's enough support for women in business now? There's definitely more support for women entrepreneurs, and some of those initiatives, as you shared, are institutions. There's a number of grants now. Many organizations offer bursaries or grants to women starting a new company. Do you think that's allowing women, to have a better chance of succeeding if they're launching a business?
Yeah, I definitely think that there are. I know that the organization, it used to be called CEO, but I think they just rebranded it, and
They changed the name. Yeah, I
I
forget the
can't.
new name too, but
I know
I know
it's
what you
not
mean. Yeah.
coming to me, but if you look it up, I'm sure it will
It's
come up.
microfinancing, right? They offer microfinancing.
Microfinancing for like they are giving opportunities. Is there enough? I would say no. There's not enough, and it's proven that women have to work much harder to get funding. I know a lot of entrepreneurs that just really struggle with that, and there's still the impression that women's businesses aren't as worthy of financing as businesses run and started by men. And I mean, I think that's changing a little bit, but there's still, I would say it's still there. That stigma is still there, and you know, we have to just be savvier, because ultimately, the majority of entrepreneurship and small business in Canada is women run and led. Like, we are contributing so much, so we need to be recognized for that and support more businesses.
And unfortunately, we just did a podcast episode on that recently, but the Canadian Chamber of Commerce came out with some new numbers, and last year's results showed that we're losing women entrepreneurs. So the number of women in business is declining, and Canada had set an objective of increasing that number, and unfortunately, it's going the other direction. So
Oh, I
I
didn't
agree
see
with
that
you.
report yet.
We have to do more, to make sure women can stay in business and have the right support to launch new
I
businesses as
know,
well.
especially with the pandemic, I think that really had a huge impact, because I know even just in Kitchener-Waterloo area, how many women-run businesses, dance studios, like all these things that just didn't make it through. So there's some rebuilding that we have to do, and I think, you know, providing not just like we need the grants available and the financing, but also the mentoring is such a critical part. I wish we had that. I think we could have saved like years and years of time and probably a lot of huge mistakes. But now, like, that is just very critical to have people experienced in business guiding these startups through all these challenges, especially for brands. I feel like brands and tech, those are the two big areas that really need support.
Well, thank you so much. It's been fantastic hearing about your journey. And again, I'm so glad there's companies like yours that are helping redefine the category, you know, around menstrual care, around really sexual health overall for women. And you're contributing so much to the conversation, and you've been doing so for two decades now. So thank you and congrats. And I can't wait to see where you go next. And we'll link all the ways that our listeners can find all your products, including the new products that you've recently launched. Thank you so much.
Eva, I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.